It's Friday, yay, which means time for our reporter roundtable from politics to jails. A lot has happened this week, and we want to dive right in. My panel of journalists today are Seth Ogilvie with the Idaho Public Television. I know where you're from, Seth. I just read it wrong. Cynthia Soule with the Idaho Statesman and Nicole Foy with the Idaho Press. Welcome. It's Friday. This is what happens. Yeah. I know where you're all from. All right. Seth, you just literally this morning interviewed some folks who were down working on at the border.
Yeah, they were volunteering, providing legal services and counseling at the border. They left, I think it was last Tuesday. Nicole was there as well when they took off to go down. It was about five people. They've been dealing with folks that are in the exact separated children kind of scenario that everyone's thinking of. People who came to the United States, applied for asylum, were separated from their children. And the stories read like Kafka's The Castle. I mean, it is just an insane process that they're going through. Little information. Most people don't even speak the language that's there. I mean, people think, oh, they speak Spanish. There's a lot of folks from Guatemala who speak indigenous languages. Mm. They don't speak Spanish. They don't speak English. They're just kind of using rudimentary ability to talk to both their lawyers and the ICE agents and the guards. And they're all, you know, like going through this trauma of trying to get their children back. I was told a heartbreaking story about a man who came from Guatemala. He was being threatened by a gang there. They put graffiti outside of his house saying, "We're going to take your daughter from you. Give us your daughter or we'll kill you." So he flees to the United States, applies for asylum because he's trying to protect his daughter. Mm-hmm. To cut to the end of the super tragic story, the caseworkers that went, or the volunteers that went down from Idaho, figured out where his daughter was located. They called up the facility that had his daughter, and they said, "Oh no, she's actually been reunited." And they said, "No, the daughter has not been reunited. Like, we're with the father right now." So they had to go in and tell the father that after all this work, all of the things that he's gone through, the U.S. government doesn't even know where his daughter is at this point, or handed his daughter to someone else.
And so these are, I mean, these are volunteers, and we're talking about lawyers, social workers going down. Nicole, you've covered this as well. I mean, how are they coming back after, you know, taking time off to go down there to help? But then story after story, this is what they hear.
I mean, they're haunted by this. A couple of the other, I talked to one of them today, but a lot of the other ones can't talk about it without crying at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, you do need counseling afterwards. These images will stick in your brain. I was told like one woman just couldn't get a guy with his head in his hands out of her brain because it was like he was just breaking down. He was having a mental episode because he just couldn't deal with it anymore. No answers, nothing.
Especially when, and something that I think is really important to make the distinction, a lot of these families that they're dealing with, there's been some confusion about the difference between immigration and these asylum seekers. Many of these families, especially the ones coming from Guatemala, they came and applied for asylum legally. That means maybe they did cross over the border, but many of them are applying at ports of entry, which is a completely legal way to apply for asylum, and they're still going through the exact same thing of being separated from their families, whereas as far as they were told, they did everything they were supposed to.
That's a good point of distinction too, Nicole, because I don't think we've heard much about that. Mm-hmm. I want to switch gears a little bit and Cynthia, bring you into the conversation. A lot's been going on in Ada County recently. Get us updated on Ada County Highway District. They are asking prosecutors to look into an ACHD commissioner's emails, correct?
Yes. So under state law, governmental bodies, decision-making bodies, cannot form public policy. They cannot conduct it in secret, how they're going to move forward with public policy. So what has happened, Ada County Highway District is going to have a proposal before voters in November to increase vehicle registration fees. And two commissioners voted against taking it to the voters, and three voted for it. So the voters get to decide the issue. But what has happened is one of the ACHD commissioners, Jim Hansen, individually sent emails to each of his four fellow commissioners saying, "I will come out in support of vehicle registration fee, join the commission as a unified body supporting increasing these fees, if you will do these public transit infrastructure related things for me." And some of them are policy based. A couple of them would actually require a decision, a budget issue, or implementing different level of service. So under open meetings law, you can't do that, there's also a thing called a serial meeting, where if you have a quorum, you have to publicly notice that they're all meeting. But if you talk one-on-one and then get to the end result without actually meeting as a quorum, that's called a serial meeting. And so he did individually send comparable emails separately to each of the commissioners instead of doing a group email. And in hindsight now, he says he wished he wouldn't have done that. He should have done a group email. He should have just said, let's have a discussion. But the fact is, it's out on the open. He's already self-reported himself to the Ada County prosecutor saying, I want clarification. Did I or did I not violate? Mm-hmm. And the commissioners on Wednesday also voted to turn their internal investigation over to the Ada County prosecutor and say, does this comply with state law or doesn't it? And so I think no matter what, we'll benefit because we'll have clarification. But this is nothing new with they just have gotten smart. We don't do it in writing. We do it orally. And he even said, I should have done it orally. I shouldn't have put it in writing. And so this is an instance where it came out in the public light. And now let's see what the legal minds have to say about it.
There's also like a wonderful irony in this story, because Jim Hansen was the one that actually carried the open meetings legislation in the legislature.
Yes.
And is married to Joan Cartan Hansen, who is my colleague at Public Television. And in the press club, we often refer to as the mother of the open records laws. So I can't imagine what dinner was like after your story published.
Yeah, no kidding. But he has been very, very forthcoming. He said, I know better. I'm contrite. But I think we benefit when these things bubble up, because we get clarification, and maybe it serves as a reminder mm-hmm. to those you're not supposed to do that, and those who still insist on doing it, well, don't do it in writing.
And you're very right, Cynthia. I mean, it could frankly just be someone making an honest mistake, but we have laws in place that you are supposed to follow, especially when you're a public official.
Yes.
And if you didn't, you're going to get your hand slapped. If it comes to the public light.
If it gets to the public light.
Yeah, that's always the
key.
That's
the challenge.
That's the challenge right there.
Yes.
And, Nicole, you, for better or for worse, you have been following the Canyon County Jail saga.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. As she says tiredly. Okay, where are we with this right now?
Well, I would say we have moved forward, except we haven't really.
Okay.
But, you know, just to recap, this has been something that's been going on for a couple months. The Canyon County Jail, Canyon County has so far failed to get any measure passed that would get them a new jail. As they're looking down the road of, even if they were able to get a bond passed in November, which they still haven't decided to do, that's not going to have a new jail, new capacity for inmates for, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. So they're looking for emergency measures. And they have tapped an option that is actually being used in a jail in Missouri, Greene County Jail, that there's really no other way to say it. They're steel truck trailers.
These are kind of like the pods, right?
Yeah,
the
they call
lot.
Them pods, but they are made out of truck trailers, and they're going to be placed in the parking lot, and they'll hold about 122 of Canyon County's female inmates. It will just be for women. And they're hoping that it will open up some more bed space for the men, who will just entirely be in the Dale G. Hale Detention Center. But yeah, we're looking at that possibly passing. And one of the things that's the newest wrinkle is they're hoping to use foregone property taxes, $2.3 million, to pay for the first year of it. And that's something that is considered – they still haven't gotten the plans yet. That still has to pass next week if Caldwell Planning and Zoning does. If they're willing to put these jail pods in a parking lot right across the street from houses. If that passes, they still have to prove that they can only – get these plans and this facility from this one company. They're claiming sole source procurement, which they have not proved yet. And they have to get it into the budget using $2.3 million of foregone property taxes.
I have to say, when she said foregone property taxes, I think I heard Wayne Hoffman's and Mike Moyle's heads just go kaboom, because that has been so controversial in Ada County and with state lawmakers.
Well, and I have to say, this was never a very popular opinion with the public ever since it's been introduced. But I just attended the first budget hearing, and Canyon County, like many counties in Idaho, are not for raising property taxes. And there really was not a lot of support for raising property taxes for jail trailers in the parking lot. Mm.
And if you really want Wayne's head to explode, you look at the Department of Corrections budget, because they have a line where they actually do county and out-of-state services. Last year, that budget increased by 100%. This year, they're trying to increase it by another $8 million. And they're competing for bed space with a lot of these counties as well. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of counties that actually also contract out to other counties for bed space. So the price overall is going up. So if Canyon County has to go to Ada County, they're going to have to pay more as well. And there's just a lot of people incarcerated at the moment.
I mean, in Canyon County, I mean, I just checked the numbers that we have today. Canyon County Jail has 451 inmates, and they have 36 out of county. So that's, you know, you have to calculate the amount of money and manpower mm-hmm. that is going into getting, you know, we have people in Owyhee County. We have them in Elmore County. We have them in several counties that take several hours to get to.
And that's the thing that I think sometimes the general public doesn't understand. When they're housed in a different county, their case is still mm-hmm. in, like, Canyon County, yeah. for example, your court case, all of that. And if you actually also are in a county where you don't have, like, video, where they can sit you in front of a video screen and you can have court, they have to bus you back. Mm-hmm. Somebody's paying for that.
And our sheriff has also made the point that this is just a huge liability as well when you're talking about transporting inmates back and forth on roads that, you know, are not always well traveled. It can be dangerous for his deputies and also just for the general public. And so it's a liability that they're constantly hoping that this temporary jail solution will fix if it gets passed.
And it can actually affect law enforcement. We're in mm-hmm. Custer County mm-hmm. last year, and they have the jail that only has 4 beds and no dividers. So if a woman gets pulled over and there's men there, they have to figure out a place to put that woman, and they can't use their own jail. They were actually going to Canyon County for a little bit. They've gone to Ada County. But that means if you pull over a woman for maybe a DUI, you have to decide, is it even worth it to ticket her or arrest her, because it's about 8 hours to get them to the jail, then 8 hours to get them back. And it just becomes like a resources game of, is for the public safety, is it just better to tell her to sleep it off in the car?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless it reaches a level where all that's worth it.
It is a fascinating conversation. Unfortunately, our time is up. It went by quick today. I want to thank my panel of journalists, Seth Ogilvie with Idaho Public Television, Cynthia Sewell with the Idaho Statesman, and Nicole Foy with the Idaho Press. Thanks, guys, so much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.